All right, this is Hot Start.
I'm Fast Eddie, and I'm wondering, does that horse have a jet engine in it?
No, but it probably has an afterburner.
Yeah. Did on that one episode of Seinfeld.
Anyway, we are joined by Mr. Earl Wiener. Or I should say Dr. Earl Wiener, because didn't I see something about PhD on there?
Yes.
Wow. I'm impressed.
Don't be too impressed.
It doesn't even get you a cup of coffee, huh?
For $3, I can get a cup of coffee.
Okay.
That's pretty much the same thing we do.
And they're from some organization I never heard of, National Transportation Safety Board.
Somebody.
What do they do?
Well, we try to make things safer for traveling public. But in particular, in this case, we're trying to make things safer for general aviation.
The kind of flying
that you and I do.
I was just thinking, though, that when you said that we try and make it safer, it's a tough job because we're trying to make it more unsafe, apparently, the way we do things. It seems that on certain days, anyway.
Well, of course, this is an unusual situation here, but, general aviation is really the most vibrant part of the aviation business, particularly amateur builds. And, our charter at the National Transportation Safety Board is to improve aviation safety, but we kind of do that by investigating airplane accidents, and we investigate 1,500 airplane accidents, general aviation accidents a year. So that's our biggest chunk of the business, if you will. We've translated that over the last couple of years into a focus on general aviation safety. Just to give you a little bit of feel for it, we keep talking about the fact that over the last decade, general aviation accidents, the accident rate has remained kind of unchanged, even though the number of accidents have gone down, but the number of flying hours has gone down in part because of the economy. But if you peel that onion a little bit more carefully, you find out that corporate aviation, which is part of general aviation, has gotten safer. Business aviation has gotten a bit safer. Instruction has stayed about the same. And unfortunately, the general aviation personal flying, the part of the general aviation business that you and I tend to do, has gone up in its accident rate over the last 10 years. So that's why we've got to focus on it.
And so your main goal is education?
Well, main goal is education. And I guess in particular, when we look at the kind of accidents that general aviation pilots have, we keep seeing the same kind of accidents over and over again. So many of these accidents, like loss of control in flight or loss of control on the ground, are accidents that don't need to have to happen.
How much of that can you chalk up to inexperience of the particular pilots? I mean, as a student pilot, yeah, there's a couple times when I almost had a couple of those too. So you're learning something new.
Well, instructional flying is... We've separated instructional flying out from the personal flying. It's the personal flying. Instructional flying is staying about even. It's the personal flying that's going up in terms of accident rates.
Yeah, the actual already certified pilots.
These are already certified pilots. Now, that category includes the amateur build. And so we've had a focus for over the last year, along with, in partnership with the EAA, to look at the safety of amateur built aircraft.
Well, this is just an opinion. I don't know, but I've always seen that most of the guys that build amateur-built airplanes have the attitude that my butt's in this, so I'm not doing anything less than perfect. You hear the guy that's built the same part four times because he didn't like the first three until he got it right. And I don't know if that is something you have found in your research or not.
Well, the study showed some interesting things, like, for example, that a lot of the accidents happen on the first flight. But interestingly, it happens on the first flight for the second or third owner, too. So when somebody has built one, flies it for a while, decides to sell it, the new owner comes along, buys the airplane, and has an accident on the first flight or during the first few flights. And I think we see it not so much a problem with the construction or the design of the aircraft itself. It's the fact that most of these folks, when they have accidents, have a lack of proficiency.
Right, they're unfamiliar with the airplane. The one thing I've always heard is that the most home builds fly so much, control forces are so much lighter than what you trained in, Cessnas and Pipers and stuff, that that's a tough adjustment.
Well, these airplanes often have considerably different stall characteristics. The stall characteristics are probably not tailored as much as they would be for example, a Cherokee or a Cessna 172 or 150. So they've got an airplane that's faster, that's stalls faster, that's got some a little bit more aggressive handling qualities, as you point out, lighter on the control forces, because often somebody builds one of these airplanes because it has more performance. But along with that comes the need for making sure that you know how to fly that airplane, that you get familiar with it. That's one of the areas that we've focused on the amateur built study. Another area we focused on is the need for basically carefully exploring the flight envelope. So it's a flight test issue. How do you understand what this airplane really is capable of and what its bad habits are? Because every airplane's got some bad habits, you just have to know where they are. And that was one of the focus areas of the study, is making certain that the flight test is designed to determine what the airplane's capabilities and characteristics are.
So then you would say a bad situation is a pilot going on a first flight of his new home build who hasn't actually flown that particular type of aircraft before.
Or flown one like it, yes. That's a good characterization.
Yeah, that's a not a good setup.
Well, here's a question for you. When you have a completed home build, what is the accident rate compared to, say, a professional pilot who is hired by the builder to test fly the airplane versus the builder himself doing it? Have you seen any kind of a breakdown on that?
Well, I can't give you the specific details, but I recall that our study looked at that, and it's much more successful to have somebody who's familiar with the flight characteristics of that airplane doing the first flight to find out. Well, basically, it's a proof flight.
Right. At that point, you're not sure it's going to fly, and you're not sure it's going to fly well.
Well, I think, though, that the EAA process for, there's suggestions about...
The technical counselor program comes to mind.
The technical counselor program. Yeah, there's lots of capability available if the owner builder decides he would like to have the support. So we certainly encourage that program. We encourage training in the airplane. We encourage familiarization so that you don't get surprised by your first flight of the airplane.
What about the practice of having a defined flight plan for that flight? I'm going to do this, and then I'm coming back to land. I'm not going to change it. Do you see that a lot as being a big help? Do you see deviating from that as a cause of accidents?
Well, I can't comment on the specifics of that, but I come from several decades of experience with large jet transports. And the flight test program there is very methodical, very specific. You explore the envelope a little bit at a time so that you don't find yourself in a position of discovering a really unusual flight characteristic long after you've gotten into it. You kind of nibble at the edges of the envelope and expand the envelope. And that's done in a very methodical way.
So obviously then the test plan is a good thing, but I mean, you always hear about the guy, well, it was going so well, I thought I'd fly around for another half hour or something like that, and then he gets himself in trouble doing something or runs out of fuel or something like that.
Well, there are certainly a number of ways to get in trouble with any airplane, whether it's amateur built or a fully certified aircraft.
Well, it seems to me that a lot of the stuff that you're trying to prevent happens on the first flight. I know that I've read a lot of reports on your website regarding fuel problems with brand new aircraft. They take off, life is good, they're climbing out, and all of a sudden, quiet engine. And sometimes it doesn't end well. Has the NTSB got any kind of programs or any kind of documentation that would help a home builder troubleshoot his airplane before he has a problem? Specific procedures or anything that they should follow with regards to something like that?
Well, the study certainly pointed out the need for a functional test of the fuel system. And so our focus has been on encouraging people to do a functional test of the fuel system. The specifics of the fuel test depend very much on the specifics of the system being tested. But I think there's plenty of literature available for deciding, once a builder decides to do a functional test of the fuel system, there's plenty of information about how to do that. But we've found much higher than would have been expected incidence of loss of fuel. So fuel exhaustion, but not necessarily fuel exhaustion from, the airplane comes down with fuel in the tanks.
Right, I would call that fuel starvation.
Fuel starvation.
Fuel's there, but it's not getting to the engine.
That's a better term.
Well, the aircraft manufacturers have got to have specific procedures to check out the fuel systems. Boeing's not going to fly a brand new 787 without checking out the fuel system. What about the amateur-built aircraft? Do they have procedures with their manuals and everything saying you should do this to your fuel system before you fly this aircraft? Or are people just bolting it all up saying, yep, it's good, and oops?
Well, I guess I really can't comment on the specifics of what the various kit manufacturers have. But, of course, not all amateur-built aircraft are built from kits. Some are built from first designs.
Napkins.
Yeah, napkins.
Yeah.
And, those certainly have a bigger challenge in terms of coming up with a functional test. But, again, a functional test is just a process for making certain that the system works as designed. That's certainly not difficult to define. It may be more difficult to do. Or the importance of it is underestimated.
Well, I would think that, the part of that functional test is getting that nose-up attitude that you're going to assume during a climb out and making sure the fuel gets there, making sure you don't lose the flow.
I know I have a couple of ideas about how to test fuel systems. I just don't know if they would actually be a relevant test in the real world. And I would have to go with him.
I don't think he's going to ride in your airplane to prove it out.
Well, I haven't built it yet, so that's good. But his idea of nose-up attitude and running the engine, that sounds to be a pretty good idea. There have been a lot of accidents where as soon as they rotate, your fuel supply is interrupted and you have to land.
Mm-hmm. The fuel becomes unported in the tanks.
Well, that'd be one way. The other way is if you're relying on gravity flow and all of a sudden the engine's higher than the tank, that isn't going to work too well.
Well, that's a problem too. So these are all things that can be identified ahead of time and tested for, and that's what we call generally functional tests. The system functions as intended under all the conditions, all of the flight envelope, flight attitudes.
So all in all, though, how does amateur-built safety stack up to the general aviation aircraft as a whole? I mean, are they on par? Is there always a higher accident rate with home builds?
There's a significantly higher accident rate with home builds,
okay,
which was one of the reasons that it drew our attention to say, what's going on here that causes these higher accident rates? And so because of that, the NTSB partnered with EAA to first define what the fleet of amateur-built aircraft really is, and then why do we see a higher accident rate?
Okay, real quick, if I want to come talk to you guys on the field, where would I find you?
We're in the Federal Pavilion. We have a large booth there. We have some very interesting series of photographs of the Reno accident, along with some explanation of what we saw in that. So I think that, and along with a wrecked RV-4, we've got some interesting stuff to show.
All right, very good. Well, we'll definitely make our way up there.
Oh, definitely.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk with you.
No problem. This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie. And you're listening to EAA Radio.